Okay, we are going to get rolling here. I will call this hearing to order. This is the Minnesota Senate Transportation Committee of Monday, February 20th, 2023. It's about 5 minutes after 3 o'clock. We are in room 1100 of the Minnesota Senate building. Members and to the public, we have two items on our agenda today. We will have the third and final of the governor's budget presentations. This one will be for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And then we will hear Senate File 1132, a bill from our Vice Chair, Senator Morrison. So with that, we will get going. I will invite the commissioner and whomever else you would like to bring forward with her to the table. A quorum is present, and in accordance with the rules of the Senate, the following members will be participating remotely in today's hearing: Senator McEwen from Duluth, Minnesota, and Senator Port from Burnsville, Minnesota. Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nancy Dobenberger, and I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Thank you for allowing us to present to you today the MnDOT portion of our governor's One Minnesota budget. I am also joined here today by MnDOT's budget director, Sam Brown, my colleague. He can help to answer any questions that you have on the proposed budget. MnDOT has 22 items in the governor's budget recommendation. The largest are the three top lines, the multimodal transportation package, and what is needed for maintaining current service levels, along with the tab fee restructuring. So I'll touch briefly on all of these, but going a little deeper into the multimodal transportation package, as well as the recommendation for the tab fee restructuring. Overall, the governor's recommended base funding from the general fund is $16 million per year. Next slide. So on the multimodal transportation package, it's recommended that $722 million general funds over 4 years split half and half between trunk highway and everything else transportation. And then also $50 million in trunk highway bonds is recommended to provide matches for federal grants. Next slide. And this is a table you might have seen before. We've been showing this one since the IIJA federal funding package was passed. This is a table that shows how much IIJA funds are planned to come to Minnesota for MnDOT and local agencies and about what is needed to match these programs. The last row on this table right above the grand total is our estimate of what is needed for discretionary grant programs. $450 million per year is what we're estimating coming to Minnesota, and that is by using a simple 2% of all of the federal funds in discretionary grant programs, 2% being we are one of 50 states. Next slide. So first, the $358 million in trunk highway funds, that is about $90 million per year, actually $89.5 million per year. And that's the recommendation for general fund transfer to the trunk highway fund over 4 years. And that is broken down as follows. It's $50.5 million base increase for state road construction, and that's in general to be used for IIJA federal funds, like the formula match. Then $22 million base increase for operations and maintenance, $12 million the base increase needed for program planning and delivery, and $5 million base increase for agency support. And then, as I mentioned, on top of that, $50 million trunk highway bonds to provide the match for federal grants. So that $50 million in trunk highway bonds, just to be clear, is on top of the $358 million. And there's a note there at the bottom, the budget authority that we needed to spend the $315.5 million of federal funds that came to us through IIJA in the current biennium is now passed and signed into law, approved in Chapter 6. Thank you so much, Transportation Committee, for moving that bill, Senate File 24, along so quickly. We very much appreciate that. All right. Then the The next slide is the $364 million in general funds, and that is the other half of the multimodal transportation package to remain as general funds for all non-trunk highway needs. So that is $100 million in one-time general funds to provide local match for federal grants, and some of that would also go toward technical assistance and support for grant applications. And then $66 million per year in general funds for non-highway project matches, and that would include for programs such as EV charging infrastructure, Greater Minnesota Transit, state airport infrastructure, the Small Cities Program, and discretionary grants. Right. Now I will talk about the TAB fee restructuring, but before I do, wanted to touch on long-term funding needs. So we're in the process, MnDOT is in the process of updating our Minnesota State Highway Investment Plan. That's our 20-year plan for state road construction, and that's just focused on MnDOT highways. But we are projecting a funding gap of between $19 and $27 billion. So roughly speaking, the overall gap is about $1 billion per year over those 20 years. And that's increased since the last plan due to several factors: our projected cost of inflation, refined and more thorough planning process, and some new state goals in areas such as pedestrian and bicycle facilities and freight. The low end of the estimated needs, the $52 billion, reflects MnDOT successfully achieving preliminary goals of reducing per capita vehicle miles traveled. So if MnDOT is successful in reaching the target of VMT reduction by 14% per capita by 2040, our highway mobility need could drop by $5 billion. And in addition to the needs identified by MnDOT, based on our performance measures, cities and counties have identified $5 to $6 billion in priority investments on the state highway system. Next slide. I'll just touch on these next couple tables that demonstrates a little bit of the need. This slide talks about the bridge condition. And if you look at the last two columns, the second to the last is the end of the STIP years, where we'll be with our performance measures. So the STIP, the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program, our four-year program out to 2026, we are still in the red when it comes to comparing to our target for good condition bridges on the national highway system. But okay, at the end of the STIP, we're still in the green, 3.7% poor at the end of our STIP. However, you can see then when you go out to the end of our CHIP years, the 10-year plan, then our measures are dropping. And so this just demonstrates the need for continued revenues in these areas. The lower part of the chart there talks about other state highway bridges. So those are not on the state highway system, but MnDOT-owned bridges. Next slide. And similar for pavement condition, this talks about interstate pavements and national highway system pavements. We're doing pretty well with pavement condition, but that does assume that revenues stay steady and the funding for pavements continues. Next slide. Oops. I'll just start talking about TAB fee restructuring. That would be the next slide that we would have. Oh, thank you. All right. So this proposal is structured for TAB fee restructuring so that nobody will pay more next year than they do this year unless they purchase a new vehicle. But it concentrates the necessary new revenues on those who are most likely to pay, those buying new vehicles, not those with vehicles 11 years old or older. But how does this compare to the current? Why don't we go to the next slide? There we go. Current law is $10 plus 1.285% of MSRP of a passenger vehicle adjusted for depreciation. That is the same in the proposed change, but the depreciation is different. The current law has depreciation beginning with 100% of MSRP in the first year. The proposed change would bring it to 160% of MSRP in the first year. and then declining to 100% in the second year, and then declining 10 percentage points each year after that. So then the tax for vehicles 11 plus years would go down to $30 a year. And that compares with the current 35. So it's less for those older vehicles. Those who are still owning older vehicles will pay less 11 years and outward with those vehicles. The proposed change would be effective January 1st of 2024. Next slide. This table shows how this would work for a new vehicle with a $40,000 purchase price. So in this example, the tab fee would increase by $308 in the first year. You can see the comparison on the top line, but note that's less than 1% of overall cost increase. Over those first 11 years, a total of $776 would be paid by the owner, but then each year after that, they would pay $5 less per year. And then again, with nearly half of all vehicles being over 11 years old, those owners would be paying $5 less rather than the $35 per year, they'd be paying $30 per year. Next slide. And now on this chart, this shows what this would look like compared to existing and a line chart, and also how that compares to both the states of Wisconsin and Iowa. So the blue sloping line represents the current tab fee structure in Minnesota. The reddish-orange line shows the proposed restructure, so you can see the large increase in year one. That's the 100% MSRP that it is now, 260% MSRP. Wisconsin is shown on the yellow line, and Iowa is shown on the gray line. So for Wisconsin, they charge a flat fee of $85 per year. Iowa, with the gray line, charges tab fees based on vehicle weight. So for a normal vehicle, about 3,000 pounds, the tax is $412 per year for the first 7 years. Next slide. So now I'll go on to the need for maintaining current service levels, part of the budget, where we're addressing needs for preserving purchasing power and compensation pressures. Compensation costs include fiscal year 23, which is retroactive, and fiscal 24 and fiscal 25, so 3 years. And it includes compensation cost increases for the next biennium, including the cost of living, steps, and insurance. And over the past 5 years, average compensation costs for MnDOT employees have increased by nearly 3% per year and nearly 4% per year in the most recent biennium. This is due to annual step increases and rising employer-paid health care contributions. Next slide. Then the next part of the budget, maximize federal transportation climate funding. So Minnesota will receive about $290 million in formula funds for climate-related programs over the 5 years of IIJA. That is $68 million for the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program, $120 million for the PROTECT, that's the Increasing Resilience of the System program, almost $100 million in carbon reduction program, and this $2 million base general fund increase will provide us resources to leverage those federal dollars. The climate programs have competitive versions that cities, counties, tribes, and others can apply to directly. Next slide. MnDOT owns and maintains the ARMR system. That is the Allied Radio Matrix for Emergency Response System. And the proposal is for $2 million one-time general funds to replace aging radio towers and buildings. Each of the towers costs about $1 million to replace. And the need is actually for $12.5 million, but the proposal is for $2 million. And that provides, the ARMR system provides mobile radio coverage within all 87 Minnesota counties. So when the cellular network has not held up, and some of those examples would be like during 35W bridge collapse or during civil unrest, The armor system communication backbone was strong and performed as needed, which is very important for public safety communications in Minnesota. It provides radio service to federal, state, tribal, and local agencies and serves many different agencies. Many agencies count on this, as I mentioned, for the backbone of their emergency communications system. Next slide. Strategic technology system investments. The proposal is for $3 million one-time general funds, $4 million base general funds increase, and that is to provide for 9 full-time equivalents to deliver and support IT projects. The project or priority initiatives among projects are asset management, data and document transfer, and research project management systems. The one-time funds allows for implementation and modernization of core systems and applications, and then the base funds allows for ongoing support and maintenance of those systems. Local transportation disaster support. This is a budget item. There are two parts here. The first part of the recommendation is for $3.3 million, and that covers 4 state-declared disasters from 2018 through 2020. And that can be dropped when counties do receive the funds. The plan is for those to come from the Department of Public Safety, so that is just a placeholder for now until those are paid. But the second part is going to be needed. That is the base general funds for a future disaster relief program. So that would create a disaster relief contingency account that can be used to reimburse those local agencies for future events. Next slide. Thanks. Rail grade crossing safety. This would provide $750,000 in fiscal year 24 and $1.5 million starting in fiscal 25 base trunk highway funds for the rail grade crossing safety account. Grade crossings cost approximately $300,000 per location to repair or replace. So $750,000 will replace 2 to 3 additional grade crossings in fiscal 24. $1.5 million will replace 5 grade crossings annually. Aeronautics systems and investments. The recommendation is for $15 million one-time general funds to replace and repair automated weather observing systems, or AWOS as we call them, and those include navigational aids. Many of those AWOS systems are out of production and past their life expectancy, and they provide critical weather information for aviation activities, including medical, air, commercial, and freight flights. They're used by the National Weather Service for general forecasting, and they're located at publicly owned airports throughout the state. Utility aircraft replacement. This recommendation is for $7 million one-time general funds to replace 2 utility aircrafts. So these are the aircrafts that we call our pickups in the sky. They're used to transport MnDOT technician and parts like navigational aids for time-sensitive repair work. And they're necessary to minimize the impact of aviation equipment failures such as AWOS or other navigational systems. MnDOT serves 133 publicly owned state-funded airports. Our aircraft, these 2 aircraft, the Bonanzas, are over 40 years old, and they have more than 9,000 hours on their frames, so they are definitely in need of replacement. Then our tribal affairs training program. So qualified workforce is a big challenge in the construction industry, and the $900,000 base general fund increase would bring a consistent level of program construction skills training out in Indian country throughout the state. Also part of this request is for $100,000 of base general fund increase for the Tribal State Relations Training Program, and that would provide an additional full-time equivalent to enhance virtual training options that have been successful over the last couple years. Next slide. The Twin Cities Milwaukee-Chicago Rail Corridor. So the Consolidated Rail Infrastructure and Safety Improvement Program, CRISI, provided what we call the R&E, Restoration Enhancement Grant. This funding request, this $1,200 in fiscal year 24 and $2.3 million in fiscal 25 of one-time general funds would go toward operating costs and provide matches for the federal grant. Also, $940,000 in fiscal 24 and $980,000 in fiscal 25 of one-time general funds for capital improvements on the TCMC are needed as well. Next slide, Stone Arch Bridge. $5 million is recommended in one-time general funds for the Stone Arch Bridge repairs. And there's a match that's needed, for $24 million of total federal funds. That'll allow us to get at both the underwater portion of the repairs that are needed as well as the above water portion. So this is an additional one-time general fund request to match additional federal funds to be able to do all this work within one contract. And a note here, MnDOT does own the Stone Arch Bridge, and the City of Minneapolis is responsible for the bridge deck maintenance, but that was part of legislation that was passed a few decades ago to put that ownership under MnDOT. However, since it doesn't carry a trunk highway, we can't use trunk highway dollars to fund it. Way station program. $1 million of base general funds is recommended for a way station program, and they're built and maintained by MnDOT, but they are operated by the Minnesota State Patrol's Commercial Vehicle Enforcement Division. They are essential for federally mandated size, weight, and safety programs, and reliable base funding allows for consistent maintenance and repairs of these assets. Next slide. Rail safety inspectors. MnDOT's rail inspection program strives to encourage railroads to comply with rail safety regulations, which are designed to prevent derailment, hazmat releases, other serious rail incidents in the state. Both the railroads and the public benefit from safe railroad operations. Railroads do perform their own inspections on their infrastructure, but MnDOT's rail inspectors perform detailed regulatory inspections for compliance with state and federal rail safety regulations. So the recommendation here is for, it's not to add any inspectors. The number of MnDOT inspectors would remain at six, but $300,000 would be the amount that we would, through this budget item, assessed to Class 1 and Class 2 railroads. Right now, the railroads are assessed for four of the inspectors' costs. This would have that same funding stream for all six of them. Next slide. Safe routes to school extension. This is not a request for more money, it's to extend the Safe Routes to School appropriation. So funding was granted in 2021 in first special session, that was $5 million in general funds. Appropriation is available till June 30th of this year, so we are seeking to extend it to June 30th of 2025. Safe Routes to School creates safe walking and biking paths to school. Next slide. Freight network optimization tool. And again, with this budget item, it is not a recommendation for additional funding. It is a recommendation to extend the appropriation. This one also was funded in 2021 in the first special session, and the appropriation is only available till June 30th of this year, and we are seeking to extend that to June 30th of 2025. It's important to get this extension to move forward. We needed additional time to scope the IT project and get it ready to go into procurement. But that was a lot of coordination with industry, and now it's ready to be procured, but we just need this adjusted timeline to go out for requests for proposals. Meteorological towers registration fee. This is actually an ask to remove the $50 fee requirement to register meteorological towers. So it's not a funding request, but collecting the fees has more administrative costs to MnDOT than what comes in for fees. So removing the fee, we think, would also increase registration compliance. And it is important that we get these towers registered because they can be a potential aviation obstruction. Authority to charge for traffic control. This one would permit MnDOT to collect traffic control costs. So anytime we are responding to an incident, a crash, or other traffic incident out on the system, we need to have staff and equipment out there to respond to it. And so this would help us with getting that express permission to collect costs from at-fault drivers and their insurance companies. Next slide. Sustainable aviation fuel. This is $3.2 million recommended for one-time general funds in fiscal 24 and $2.1 million base general funds starting in 24. So $11.6 million would be the four-year total, 24 through 27. This would go toward developing a pilot-scale sustainable aviation fuel program in conjunction with other state agencies. The Department of Agriculture would administer this program, but we're recommending this pilot program be funded through the transportation budget. And this would establish sustainable fuel production goals and provide incentives. And that is it for my presentation. Thank you for allowing MnDOT to present our portion of the MnDOT, or excuse me, the One Minnesota budget. And I stand for questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. I have just a couple of smallish questions first. As I was reading, this is like a little very granular, so I apologize. But and if you don't have the detail, that's fine. We can come back to it. But when I read through the budget narratives, you know, all the various change item pages that have the slightly more detailed descriptions, I noticed on the aeronautic systems and investments, in addition to automated weather observing systems, there was some discussion about instrument landing systems as well. But it wasn't clear from that page. It kind of went back and forth, and then it was just hard to discern if there really was an ILS initiative in there, and if so, how much of this $15 million that would take, or if that was separate and aside and was just being brought up tangentially. So if I could help on, you could help us understand that part of the proposal. It is $15 million, so it's not just walking around money. So,
right.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for that question. So that is correct. There are navigational aids as a part of that $15 million. The AWAS system is part of navigational aids. As far as a more detailed breakdown, I don't have that at my fingertips, but Sam, do you have more information on that at this time?
Yes, and for the record, it's Sam Brown, MnDOT Budget Director, and Chair Dibble, we do have a priority list of those types of projects, would certainly be available to share. The $15 million does not go nearly far enough. They expand past that, but we do have a good solid list, if that'd be helpful, what those projects would be.
I would appreciate your sharing more detail on that item with the committee. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then the Stone Arch Bridge, which was almost made as a gift to the city of Minneapolis a few years ago by Senator Sendrum, the gift that keeps on giving. I thought we had fixed it. So if we could have a little more understanding of what this undertaking entails, and if this will fix it, or if there are future, it's going to be more future projects to fix it up even more. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that question. Yeah, the Stone Arch Bridge has been under development for the repair project that is coming up here, and it's very close to being let, but as the development went on and as repairs were further identified and what the fixes were needed, the federal funds and thus the state matching dollars that we had for that, we had realized were not enough. So currently we have enough to let a project that would address all the needs underwater. So we do everything that's needed for repair that's under the surface of the water with the current contract. If we could get the additional dollars at this time, then we could also do the repairs that are needed above water as well.
I see. Thank you. And then finally, just kind of big picture, MnDOT's identifies a funding gap of between $19 and $27 billion over the coming 20 years. You know, that's quite a range. So it's hard to really understand what that means exactly. And in any case, I don't think your budget proposal even gets to the lower end of that range. So a couple of questions. One is when might we better understand a more precise need identification number? And what are MnDOT's kind of long-term plans to address that need? And let me also say, can when we say need, what are we talking about? Are we talking about just simply maintaining the road and bridge system in good condition? Are we talking about safety improvements, capacity enhancements, you know, those sorts of things? So just a little more on that. So kind of three-part question, if you will. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So a little bit more information on our needs and our revenues and the uncertainty around them. And then when we compare those to the gap that we have been describing between $19 and $27 billion, that gap reflects that the needs are between $52 and $57 billion. And 52 is the low end of that range, and that reflects our assumption that if we could be successful in reducing vehicle miles traveled in Minnesota by our target 14% per capita by 2040, that could drop the needs by $5 billion. So if that did not happen, then we would be at that $57 billion point. And the needs, as you had asked about, include the following investment categories. I just touched a little bit on pavement and bridge in my presentation, but it's also roadside infrastructure, rest areas, climate resilience, transportation safety, advancing technology, freight, highway mobility. And that was the category I just mentioned, that we wouldn't have as many needs if we could reduce the vehicle miles traveled. Pedestrian and bicycles, our local partnership projects, Main Street urban pavements, and then project delivery and small programs. So those are the investment categories in our Minnesota statewide highway investment plan, which is, as I mentioned, 20-year plan, and it's a constrained investment plan. And then the revenues, also some uncertainty around those, but the revenues that we're projecting over the next 20 years are $30 to $33 billion. So that's why when you take the range of needs compared to the range of revenues, you get quite a range for the gap. But generally speaking, to use a nice round number, it does equate to about, if you're kind of in the middle of that range, about $1 billion per year over those 20 years. For a gap. That's the easy number to remember anyway. Did I answer all of your questions?
Yes, I would appreciate maybe if some of that could be conveyed as well. I was trying to take notes, but don't write as fast as you talk. One final question, again, a little bit granular, and that has to do with the Sustainable Aviation Fuel Initiative. I think we call that SAF. Can you help me understand a little better kind of what the relationship would be between the Department of Transportation and the Department of Agriculture and how it would work that we would fund the initiative here but then send the project over to the Department of Ag? I'm not opposed. I think we should do more of this kind of thing. I'm just hoping to understand how that works better.
Thank you for that question, Mr. Chair. Yeah, what we are envisioning with this coming through the transportation budget is the importance of moving in this direction in the field of transportation, since transportation is unfortunately the number one emitter of the greenhouse gases. And so MnDOT certainly has a stake in moving Minnesota in the right direction in this area. However, MnDOT doesn't have experience with this sort of program where developing incentives and goals for this sort of thing that the Department of Agriculture does. So we would partner with the Department of Agriculture and they would administer the program. And we'd be certainly happy to come back and talk about that further with our Department of Agriculture partners.
Great. Thanks so much. One final question. My apologies. You know, get your thoughts form when they form. What's not included, and maybe you can confirm for me, not included in this conversation, this presentation, is the discussion of, I can't remember, it's 80 or 90% of the roadway mileage in our state, which belongs to local units of government, local jurisdictions, which I understand that's, you know, not the roadway system other than, you know, I think you play somewhat of a role in the money that flows through the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund to county state aid highways and municipal state aid streets, and some that kind of makes its way in this kind of interesting fashion to town roads. We have many tens of thousands of miles that occur on county roads that are not in the CASA system, large and small city, local roads and townships, and their bridges. Where does MnDOT help us understand the condition? I mean, they all have very able and capable advocates and organizations. We had a whole full day of local road hearings, local units of government hearings. But where does MnDOT help us as state legislators understand the condition of those locally owned systems and what the corresponding financing needs are, and what role do you play in that whole conversation?
Thank you for that question, Mr. Chair. So I'll answer that a couple of different ways in terms of our budget. The multimodal transportation package, part of the proposal is for $100 million in one-time general funds to provide local match for federal programs for that could go toward our local agencies too, and also provide them support for grant applications. The governor's infrastructure plan, the capital budget, does have a funding proposal for the local road improvement program, the local bridge replacement program. And I'm just going to pause here and ask my colleague Sam Brown if he knows of any other parts from the budget perspective where we are putting forth funds. The disaster assistance fund, I guess it was the other part that I'm thinking of, but anything else?
Yeah. Yes, Commissioner. Chair Dibble, the other item I would want to point out is our tap fee restructure. So over 4 years, with that increase in tap fees, we assume that $700 million will be deposited into the HUTD fund. While the majority of that goes, or nearly majority, goes to Trunk Highway, of that $700 million, $227 would go to county state aid highways, and then $60 million would go to the municipal streets as well.
Great. Thank you. I forgot to ask about the disaster account, but we'll come back to that. I have Senator Lang.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You struck a chord with me when you talked about the ILSs earlier. A few years ago, I had talked to one of the MnDOT representatives that was saying that, and I can say that in the field, this has actually probably been happening where those Cat 1 ILSs have been, I wouldn't say decommissioned, but definitely deinvested in. And I believe it's on purpose. I don't know if I've ever seen that in writing from MnDOT. But I guess the question is, one, are they being phased out in favor of GPS LPVs? Is it something where that's where MnDOT is going? And I know I'm talking very aviation right now, but I don't know if you can answer that without your aviation guys sitting there, or if it's something where if MnDOT has taken that stance, I think it's important that you do so vocally. You do so in a way that is public so the rest of the aviation industry can see that. And when it comes to, specifically speaking, the Cat 2 ILS approaches like Minneapolis, Rochester, Duluth, all those that, if that's where you're investing, that's where you're putting your dollars, and you're maintaining what's there, but not investing in it, please let us know.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lang, I do not know the answer.
Senator,
I'm sorry. I do not know the answer to that question. Sam, do you know?
Chair Dibble, Senator Lang, I would have to reach out with our aeronautics division to look into that.
All right. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Dobenberger. I want to refocus a little bit on something else. So the tab-free restructure, you know, concerning to me, I've heard a lot about it in my district. So what's the rationale of going up to 160%? And I have the graph here, so, and that's on a $40,000 vehicle, and I, you know, live down in the country with a lot of trucks and a lot of farmers. I know the farmers have different on a one-ton, but a lot of three-quarter-ton trucks. And if you look at that, and you kind of do the quick math on a truck, a three-quarter-ton is about $70,000. We're anticipating a $1,500 license tab fee your first year. And have we had any discussion with the auto dealers and what that might do to the, I mean, I think that's going to have a negative impact. And then will we be the highest state in the nation for license tab fees with that? Or at least the upper Midwest, it just seems awfully high. Got a lot of pushback from people, you know, hearing about that. And again, doing the rough math, that's a truck, a brand new truck's gonna have a $1,500 license tab fee. And where did the discussion of the 160%, is that looking at a different state, or how did we come up with that as far as the funding, I guess, is a little bit on the background on that.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Senator Jasinski, thank you for that question. Yeah, the proposal is structured so that someone buying a new vehicle would be paying that additional increase. So no one will pay more next year than they do this year unless they're buying that new vehicle. And that does concentrate that necessary revenue on those purchasing a new vehicle. Those who are not able to afford new vehicles, then they're not affected by this. In fact, until their vehicle's 11 years old or older, then they would pay less. Now, in terms of the question about where does that put us nationally, I am not sure. I'm going to ask my colleague Sam Brown if he knows.
Mr. Brown.
Chair Dibble, Senator Jasinski, I don't have an exact where we would rank, but certainly in the Midwest, that would put us towards the top. For example, Wisconsin has an $85 flat fee, so we would be towards the top in at least this part of the region.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Jasinski, just as a follow-up, so again, so when you're recommending this, or someone in the governor's office or someone in administration recommended this plan, do they look at another state, or where do they just come up with 160%? Is this done in other states? And again, I would think you'd at least want to consult with some other, you know, like the auto dealers or other states, or looking at where we would fall. If we're going to be put at a competitive disadvantage right away by our neighboring states, that's really not fair to our auto dealers here. I mean, if they're going to be driving across the state to, you know, to cross the river to buy a car in Wisconsin versus here, it just seems like we're putting ourselves at a disadvantage, and it seems like a very, very high number. So again, I would guess that it's the highest in the nation just by looking at this, and what would that be? And I think it's at least fair to let our citizens know that we're going to be the highest license tab taxed state in the nation. I think it's just frustrating with where we're going with our taxes, with, you know, how high they're going to be. We're going to tax people right out of the state.
All right. Let's see. We have Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good to see you again, Commissioner. I got a couple of questions. One is going down the same line that Senator Jasinski just went. Is, you know, I guess my concern is I see all over the place right now license plates at my apartment building, all over, from people already believing we're too high in our tab fees. And you see them from Wisconsin, you see them from South Dakota, North Dakota, Iowa, and I know that's against the law, but there's no way that they are living in these places that I see them. And I think as we continue to go down that road, we're going to see more of that. If there's an angle to get there, they're going to go there. That's just a statement. The question I have, though, is the goal to reduce vehicle miles traveled by 14% by 2040, knowing that we receive our, you know, at least more than probably a third of our funding from the fuel tax. There's two questions in this, but if we reduce that by 14%, we're going to drastically reduce our revenue to maintain our infrastructure. Are we going to see more of this registration fee and other types of fees to replace that fuel tax?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Howe, for that question. So, TAB fee restructure is a way to work at additional long-term transportation funding. And the vehicle miles traveled reduction. So if people are reducing their amount of travel, presumably they would then pay less in gas tax. For instance, if we are still at a point where there are a lot of fossil fuel powered vehicles out on the road. But as we look forward to the future of transportation and funding revenues, we're going to need to be doing things differently with the fuel efficiency that is already being gained by vehicles and our movement toward electric vehicles. So new revenues will need to be looked at, and the TAB fee restructure is the proposal that the administration is putting forth as a recommendation at this time.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Chair Dibble, and Commissioner, thank you for that answer, but you know, the thing is we've been trying to get the 100% of the automotive parts sales tax dedicated to transportation. I think that would be a builder there also. But when you talk about alternate fuels, all the alternate fuel vehicles pay a equivalent to the gas tax or the fuel tax. The only one that doesn't is EVs. And as we transition to EVs, I think that's an important piece that we need to identify, that they need to pay the same equivalent and use that electricity and tax it as a fuel, because electricity is a fuel. It would be dedicated to transportation. And I don't see that the Department of Transportation has been actively involved in trying to solve that issue. We are really going after putting in the infrastructure, but we're not looking at, once we continue to go through this shift, what are we doing to get that revenue for the wear and tear that I don't care what kind of fuel you're using to be on our roads, because that's not reducing the vehicle mile travel. Those EVs are still going to be on our road network and doing damage or wear and tear on our road. Why aren't we taxing that fuel the same way we do all the other alternative fuels and our traditional fuels?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Howe. And I just wanted to note, too, right now with the high upfront cost of electric vehicles, those who are buying electric vehicles are paying more in motor vehicle sales tax. Now, as the cost of electric vehicles comes down, then that might be a time to look at revenues a little differently in terms of EVs.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner, thank you for that answer. But my concern there is we don't do that same equation for Jaguars, Lamborghinis, anything else that has a high sales MSRP. I tell you what, because I get somebody buys a GMC pickup that's a Denali, pays more in sales tax than so does the person that buys the stripped down Chevy pickup truck. We don't give them a break on the motor vehicle fuel tax. I just think that's a red herring. That's a false argument. And if you're on the road, you should pay what you should be, you can buy a 40, well, you could at one time buy a $45,000, $48,000 electric vehicle pickup truck from Ford. Why should they get any better break on using the road network as anyone that buys a $65,000 GMC pickup? Well, you could buy one at one time. I don't think you'd buy one for $65,000 anymore. But still, in that range, the person driving a standard fuel vehicle is paying more than the EV vehicle in the same class. So I don't agree with that argument. And I think that if no matter what type of vehicle, fuel vehicle you're driving, it should have the same type of tax structure as any other vehicle that's on our road network. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Howe. I have next, who do I have next? Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, again, didn't plan on asking any questions, but now here I go. So I see Mrs. Box is in the back of the room. I was going to harass her. Maybe she could come up. I wasn't super concerned with the increase. If she would, I don't know. Maybe she won't. And just maybe talk tab fee comparison. You know, when I start thinking about people driving across the border to buy a vehicle, that's something that happens already. But if we're really talking about a $1,500 tab, that's a lot of money. I mean, that if it was $100, I don't know, maybe you wouldn't see somebody drive across Wisconsin border from Duluth to Superior or possibly in Rochester. But if it's a $1,500 tab, and looking at the figures, I think that's what we're talking about here. I've been looking it up online here while we've been sitting, trying to figure out exactly how much Iowa charges, and it's mostly done by weight. And for that same pickup that Senator Jasinski talked about, it sounds like $300-$400, and you'd have a tab for that. So if you're talking $1,100 difference, that's an issue for us. That's an issue for all of Minnesota. I don't know if that was a question at the beginning, and then I kind of started trailing off, Mr. Chair.
So I just printed off an article that I shared with Senator Jasinski about a week ago. So I can print it off for you again. It had to do with something that you and I have agreed on in the past, which is factoring in weight. And EV batteries are pretty heavy. So maybe there's a great coming together here in the Transportation Committee. So, Ms. Backus, I'm not sure if there's a question. Probably you agree that a super high tab fee at the outset is a lot of money. and probably I'm guessing your industry wouldn't be thrilled about that. You get to pre-testify on the governor's proposal.
All right. Well, thank you,
Everyone
Mr.
else
Chair.
Is going to demand their time at the table now.
Right. I'll be quick. Amber Backus, Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association. So, yes, that charging it on 160% of the vehicle's value would be high. I know it'd be the highest in the upper Midwest. I can't speak to other states. And, you know, it's about 60% increase when you're doing that in the fee. So just to say, though, that if you would buy your car somewhere else, you'd still have to bring it back to register it here. So buying it in another state, you'd still have to pay the tab fee and the Minnesota Motor Vehicle Sales Tax to get your Minnesota plates. So you're not going to get around it by going across the border to buy a vehicle. So.
Good information. Thank you. All right, Senator, are you waving it? Are you?
No, I'm ready. Oh, all right. Mr. Chair, again, I did a quick Google search, and I just would anticipate with the proposed 160% increase, Minnesota will have the highest taxed license tab fees in the nation, and I just think that's unfortunate.
Thank you. All right, anything further on the budget presentation? Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate the time and the presentation and your willingness to respond to questions.
Thank you.
All right. So we will move on, members, to Senator Morrison, Senate File 1132. Our intention will be to lay this on the table upon conclusion of the presentation, discussion, debate, and amendments. Or not lay it on the table, lay it over. Is the better expression.
Oh,
right, Senator Morrison, welcome to the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm pleased to present Senate File 1132 regarding the Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program. The National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Formula Program provides federal funds to states to invest in electric vehicle fast charging stations. Minnesota will receive $68 million for the federal fiscal years 22 through 26 from the IIJA. MnDOT currently does not have explicit statutory authority to install EV chargers off the state trunk highway system or MnDOT right-of-way. The proposed EV infrastructure program will provide legislative support for MnDOT to distribute federal and other non-state funds to install EV chargers, including at locations off the state trunk highway system. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to John Dukic from MnDOT to elaborate.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Mr. Dukic.
For the record, John Dukic with MnDOT's Office of Government Affairs, and Senator Morrison did a wonderful job introducing the bill. Not much more to add to that other than to note that the first subdivision gives MnDOT the authority to implement the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Formula Program, and the second subdivision gives the agency, MnDOT, the authority to engage in public-private partnerships for the purpose of expanding our EV infrastructure here in Minnesota.
Great. Thank you. Senator Morrison, ready for discussion and questions?
I am, Mr. Chair.
All right. Members, discussion, questions, amendments. Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a pretty good bill. I do have a couple questions. Realistically speaking, you mentioned the $68 million. So, you know, normally when we have a bill and you're going to set up a program, you have the dollars attached to it. You have, and I understand the concept behind why we're going probably down the route we're going down. But what does the fiscal really look like when we're talking about $68 million? What's the state's buy-in on that?
Senator Morrison.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lang, what was the last thing you said? What's the state's buy-in?
Yeah, what is to secure that $68
million? Mr. Dukic.
Senator Lang, I believe it's a 20% match that the state's responsible for.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lang.
Thank you. I'm also a little, now that the commissioner, should she leave so I can talk about her? No.
She's here.
I was just going to make sure. Is there a reason that, this is something the legislature probably would have the ability to come forward and do under our own power without the commissioner having the authority to do it so herself? Is there a reason why you would want to shift the power, more or less, from the legislature to the commissioner's office? Is there a reason for that, legally speaking, or is it a federal requirement?
Mr. Rudin is coming forward to help us understand. Mr. Rudin, welcome.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Eric Rudin, MnDOT Government Affairs. And the language about the commissioner is really just standard language that appears throughout statute. So the commissioner is acting on behalf of the department. So Ms. Stengel or the new Tim, I can't remember your last name, I'm sorry. Mr. Greenfield, is it? Could probably verify that the language about the commissioner shall and the commissioner may is just standard language that appears throughout the statutes.
Senator Lang, yeah, maybe we'll ask, Senator Lang, yeah, if your question was why the commissioner ... I think that is a term of art, and it's really another way of saying the agency, but is that the nature of your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the question is more along the lines of, as a transportation committee, being part of the transportation committee, why don't we have a bill that just says, here's the dollars we're going to spend, we put in our budget, because I don't think this is going to be passed anytime sooner than what we're talking about the omnibus bill, I'm assuming. But why wouldn't we just do it that? Here's the dollars, here's 20% to match that 68 via the transportation committee. I guess I'm just a little confused why we're
right
doing that through the department. Not that she doesn't want the responsibility. Mr. Chair.
Yes, I'll ask MnDOT to respond. I think I know the answer myself, but why don't you go ahead and respond to the question from why this agency bill, why the specific kind of policy foundation in statute is codified. I see 174.47. So, Mr. Rudin.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Lang. So the budget authority has already been approved by the legislature. There was a legislative advisory commission request that came to the legislature, and so the $68 million that we're talking about has already been appropriated through the LAC process. As far as the need for the bill, it's really just to provide some comfort language to the attorneys at MnDOT, who after reviewing other state statutes weren't sure that we had explicit authority to implement the NEVI program, and especially to spend those dollars off of trunk highway right-of-way. So that's kind of the gist of the bill.
Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, okay, there we're getting to it. that makes a little more sense, and I think that leads probably into my A1 amendment, too, that I think, I don't know, there was a lot of talking going around behind the table here, but I think it could be a friendly amendment. And what that is that it says the commissioner may not use money from the trunk highway funds to establish, and I'd like to offer that if we can do that.
So Senator Lang offers the A1 amendment, which may, I know it was publicly posted. I don't know if it's been passed out or not. Oh, here it comes. So thank you. So go ahead, Senator Lang.
And what all the amendment does is say the commissioner may not use money from the trunk highway funds to fund this project, or would come to the legislature, us sitting here behind this committee and the rest of our cohorts in the body, provide any financial assistance must be not appropriated from that. I think as this amendment has come forward and I started thinking about it, we've had the discussion many times here in the Transportation Committee about how electric vehicles are actually, it doesn't apply just to electric vehicles, but any other alternative fuel source that isn't fuel, which we're taxing, whether it's hydrogen or who knows what we'll be using in the future. How do we maintain the trajectory of our transportation or trunk highway funds going forward? I don't know if we look at that trajectory and we just try to maintain that and then fill in the gaps as we go. And if that's taxing an electric vehicle, if that's taxing hydrogen as we go, eventually someplace off in that focal point in the future, we can definitely be at a level where we're still substantially funding this. And all that amendment is saying is that, hey, if it's motor vehicle sales tax, if it's repair parts, or if it's fuel tax, don't take away from that chunk of money until we get further on down the road and we know exactly what we're refilling. That's all the amendment. I hope it would be viewed as sort of a friendly amendment. I think it allows the legislature and this committee to still make a decision later on about if we do spend money. Gives you that opportunity. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Lang. Senator Morrison to the A1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Lang. I'd like to hear MnDOT's perspective on the amendment.
Mr. Rudin.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I think we would have some concerns about the amendment. Typically, federal funds are frequently deposited into the Trunk Highway Fund when we receive them, and so just logistically, I think it could create some issues there. I would say, too, that eventually, you know, as we kind of build out the system and operate and maintain a system of electric vehicle chargers, it would kind of just become routine business, hopefully, within the department. And so I think that this restriction could place a burden on our ability to sort of deliver an EV charging program. So I think for those reasons, we would have some concerns.
So I'll just, I understand. You make a good point, Mr. Rudin, that the federal funds come in and are deposited into the Trunk Highway Fund so that it does present kind of a technical, logistical, financial challenge. As many are aware, I'm fairly sympathetic with our previous chair's perspective on Trunk Highway Fund expenditures and what's appropriate and what's not. He went quite a bit further than I would, but we had some common cause. There was a Venn diagram to be had between his perspective and mine, including actually, frankly, on this subject too. But you do present an interesting point, which I hadn't considered. With that, I'll ask Senator Morrison what she thinks of the A1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Lang, I appreciate your point. This feels like maybe a future fix, but given the point about federal funds, I guess I would urge a no vote on this amendment.
All right. Senator Lang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, and this is maybe for MnDOT, when it comes to those federal funds, do they ever come in unannounced that you don't know about them before?
Mr. Rudin.
Mr. Chair and Senator Lang, we usually have some idea of federal funds that are coming, but you know, every year when Congress does their appropriations bill, they tend to tuck in extra funding, if you will, and so sometimes it is somewhat of a surprise. We might not actually know that certain funds are available until, you know, the last minute, because it kind of shows up in the equivalent of a conference committee report, and then the bill is basically signed into law by the president before we really know the funds are coming our way. So it does happen. I would say it's not super frequent, but there are times where it does happen.
Kind of like when your parent packs your lunch. A little surprise when you get to school.
Mr. Chair, I think you're giving the federal government a lot of credit for packing lunches for us. But
all right. Anything further on the A1? All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no.
No.
No. Motion does not carry. All right. But Senator Lang, I want to continue talking about this idea, because as we get to the budget, I think you're on to something. So, all right. Anything further, members?
Mr. Chair. And I apologize. I was in conversation with staff when you were maybe talking about this, and maybe this doesn't apply either. But so I'd offer the A2 amendment, and I believe the A2 amendment that would make the commissioner must not expend any state funds under subdivisions 1 or 2 unless the legislature appropriates money for the specific purpose of implementing the statewide electric. So basically, get the program and then come back to us and then get the approval for the money. But I think I heard out of your word it was $68 million already been approved. Is that correct?
So Senator Jasinski offers the A2 amendment and has a question. Mr. Rudin.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Jasinski, that's correct. The federal funds have been approved. The governor's budget includes $3.4 million per year in matching funds, and so we're hopeful that the state legislature will appropriate those funds, you know, by June 30th, so that we can match those federal funds and begin to implement the NEVI program. I would say this would create sort of an additional burden on the NEVI funds that doesn't exist for other types of funding.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Jasinski,
and Mr. Rudin. So again, I think overall, I think we agree with what should be. I mean, it's a good thing to look at. But again, I think, unless we see what the program is and what it entails and how it, all those things, as a legislator, I'd like to see how that is before we vote on to do that. And if we knew the appropriation of how much that was, it'd make it much easier, because maybe it is a great program. We look at it, we see what it's done, and we would be in favor of it. But without knowing what the program's going to be before we're approving the bill is my frustration of, you know, I think we should have that input and not just give it to the department and automatically is approved, and we don't have any input on whether we want to spend the money on that. Maybe if the plan isn't good and we don't want to vote for it, but at least give us a chance to look at the program before we expend the funds for it.
Mr. Chair and Senator Jasinski, so the state does already have a NEVI plan that has been developed with public input. It's available on our website right now if you'd like to go look at it. That plan has already been approved by the Federal Highway Administration. And so the plan is dozens of pages, if not over 100 pages long. It doesn't identify specific locations. That's a process that we're currently undertaking to identify those specific locations for charging stations. But the actual plan exists already today.
And members, we will post a link to the NEVI plan at the committee website as a part of today's hearing. All right. Anything further on the A2s? Senator Morrison, your response to the A2.
Thank you, Chair DeBlon. Thank you, Senator Jasinski. I would, based on what MnDOT's comments, I would say for now, let's vote no on this amendment.
Okay, let's take the vote, and then I'll have a comment. All right, anything further on the A2? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. No. Motion does not carry. The A2 is not adopted. Senator Dzinski, this amendment reminds me of some of the discussion last year as the IIJA was coming forward and some of the efforts on the part of Senator Newman. Well, some I really didn't agree with because there were some prohibitions in participating in aspects of the IIJA that I thought were good, but he definitely wanted a handle on what kinds of initiatives were going to be occurring in Minnesota and what kind of state dollars. So, and we're going to have, IIJA match dollars, et cetera. We're going to have a robust discussion around this subject and the legislature's role in knowing and or specifically appropriating for some of those purposes. So we'll revisit some of the themes in the A2. So thank you for this amendment. All right. Anything further, members, on Senate File 1132?
Mr. I'll give it one more crack then.
All right. Senator Dzinski.
I'd offer the A5 amendment.
Senator Dzinski offers the A5 amendment. And go ahead and describe it.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we try to get these to you as soon as possible. They came off the press pretty quickly right before committee, so I know you've looked at a couple of them, made some inputs, and but this would basically be a reporting procedure of how the project is going to go. Gives a list of every other year, so every even number year, it would come back and tell us how the program's working, how the federal funds were used, how they were chosen, changes that were made to the plan since the previous report. You can read through it, but basically does a little bit of reporting, lets MnDOT let us know how things are going in this program so that we know, how it's working, if it's working well. So with that, I'd ask for a yes vote on the A5 amendment and ask for a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. There will be a roll call. All right, Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Chair Double, and thank you, Senator Dzinski. I'd like to hear MnDOT's perspective on this amendment as well. I don't know which one of you want to take this, gentlemen.
Mr. Dukic.
Yeah, I can take this. Mr. Chair, members, John Dukic. I think for the most part, I think we are okay with this amendment. I mean, it does provide, or it does require a little more work on our part to do the report. And has the potential for, the last line 7 here, kind of ongoing, the potential for an indefinite report here as funds could be spent kind of indefinitely potentially, but, it's something that I think we could do.
Thank you. Senator Morrison.
Chair Dibble and Senator Dzinski, just to be clear, this is the A5, not the A3, correct?
Mr. Chair and Senator, yes, we've had some changes over some concerns that were brought up, so we eliminated a couple things to try and make it more friendly with the A5 instead of the A3. So we've been working on it to try and get it to pass here, Senator Morrison.
Yes, there was an A3, then an A4, and now there's an A5.
Oh, I missed the A4.
My mistake, Senator. I referenced the wrong line, wrong amendment.
All right, Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dzinski, thank you for your patience and for working on an even more friendly amendment. I think this could provide some useful information, so I would accept this as a friendly amendment. Thank you. So a yes vote, team.
All right, great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Morrison. I'll withdraw my request for roll call.
All right, thank you. Anything further on the A5? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion carries. A5 is adopted. All right. Anything further, members, on Senate File, 1132? No. With that, we will lay this bill over for possible inclusion. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Morrison and MnDOT people. And with that, members, we're going to hear from Ms. Ethier about Wednesday.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On Wednesday, we will be handling 4 different bills. The first 2 will be both dealing with towing. One will be Senator Latz's 1448 on towed vehicle contents and Senator Dzinski's 625 on accident site cleanup charges. After that, we'll be hearing one bill from Senator Mohammed about displaying advertisements in the right-of-way. And Senator Herb will be presenting SF-718, which is the Highways for Habitat program.
And members, it's more likely than not this will be a remote, entirely remote hearing because Heard some weather's on the way. Keep hearing about that.
Let's hope the commissioner keeps those plows out.
Yes, Plowy McPlowface is going to be rolling down. And then we have Blizzo now too, right? Yes, Blizzo. All right. Very good. With that, members, we're adjourned.